All right, welcome everyone to the new episode of the Electret Podcast, the last one for the year. I'm joined by Seth Wintraub as usual.
Seth is How's it going, Fred?
I'm doing good. Not as good as you down in Florida, I'm sure.
No, the weather's great here.
Yeah, in Quebec right now, where you're getting killed. But this episode is going to be mostly focused on what to expect next year in the world of EVs and renewable energy and everything that we cover at Electrek. We're not going to go back and look at the year 2017. Even though it was a great year, I think it's more fun to just look forward and look into 2018 and what's coming. And of course, we're going to talk about the news that we covered this week with some exciting news in the world of EVs as usual. But let's start quickly with what was the biggest news of this week for Electrek. And that was Elon Musk talking about the Tesla pickup. Of course, when we talk pickup truck in the US, it's a big thing. So our audience is maybe like 50%, 60% US, 40% the rest of the world. Like we're still pretty popular in Europe and other places. So those places, they don't care about pickup trucks. But even then, when we talk about them, we talk about the Tesla pickup truck, it gets pretty crazy in the US. So Musk has been talking about doing a pickup truck with Tesla for years now. We remember back in 2013 or something, he first mentioned it. And the general idea of what he was looking for in terms of specs. Because at that point, the F-150 from Ford was already the biggest selling vehicle, and even passenger car. In the passenger vehicle in the US. So it makes sense to electrify this segment at some point, but it wasn't clear where in the product lineup from Tesla a pickup truck would fit, like with the Model 3 coming, and they were talking about the Model Y. Then out of nowhere, last month, they unveiled the Roadster. So no one knew exactly where it would fit in that lineup, but now this week, Elon confirmed that the Tesla pickup truck will be Tesla's focus after the Model Y, though he never said when the Model Y would come, but we expect it will be unveiled sometime next year and will come to market probably 2019-2020 in that range. I don't know if you agree with that, Seth.
Yeah, so I agree with that for sure. And I'm fairly certain that they have to show us something next year.
For Model Y.
For the Model Y.
Yeah.
As far as the pickup, it was interesting. His tweet talked about how it's kind of all in his head. Like that to me was like, well, shouldn't you have something on paper by now? Or like, you know, maybe a couple drawings or, you know, let Franz know something that you're thinking about it.
I'm sure they have like a clay model or something like that. Or...
Yeah. And, you know, like, frankly, they can probably take the Model Y and, you know, just lop off the back, you know, whatever. It's not hard to make a pickup. Comparatively to a
if they use the Model Y as a platform, it's going to be smaller. Because one thing that I should mention too later, because that was mentioned in a little tweet storm that he did after Christmas, he also mentioned that he was aiming for something similar in size as the F-150,
and which is actually a bigger vehicle,
or a little bigger. So Model Y platform would be a little small for which actually Model 3 platform, because they're gonna use for both cars, but yeah, they could use some existing technology or even platform, maybe the Model X.
Right, take the Model X platform. I mean, that makes a lot more sense. From, you know, you have a big wheels, you have the big base. Like the Model X is a big car. You know, I'm just a couple months into my Model X experience and. It's just like, it's a monster of a car. It's just so big. Barely fits in parking spots.
It's for sure it's going to be the biggest consumer vehicle from Tesla to date, whenever it comes out. But in terms of demand, in terms of size of market, it makes sense for Tesla to enter that space. That's for sure. If you just look at the people don't realize that outside the U.S., but the pickup trucks are the best-selling passenger vehicles in the U.S. right now. So, and a few months back, I wrote an opinion piece about this because it wasn't clear what it would take to make American automakers just go all in into the electric space. And I thought that maybe, because Tesla did a lot of work just even before delivering the Model 3, just by showing the car and taking reservation and showing that it was a huge demand for the car. That alone had a lot of impact on the industry in general, and people started increasing their investment into an all-electric vehicle in the same segment. So I thought that if Tesla can do the same with a pickup, just even if it's not ready to go to production, if it's 2 years away, 3 years away, whatever, just show what you have, show a concept, just like they did with the Tesla Roadster recently. Show what you can do in the segment with an all-electric powertrain, then start taking reservation and use that giant user base that Tesla has that really excited, and they get the reservation. And that would just like send an electric shock into the American automakers that just makes all their money. They make all their money, all the profit from the trucks. And if they see even the potential of that going away, I think they will just they will stop sitting on their hands and start working on at least a prototype of an electric pickup truck.
Yeah, I agree. Tesla's in a kind of a unique position because they don't have a full lineup of cars. They don't have to worry about the Osborne effect, which is, you know, pre-announcing something that would take away from current sales. So, you know, nobody's thinking about buying a Tesla truck right now because one doesn't exist. I mean, you know, some people may buy a Model X if they want a pickup, but you know, that's a very strange would be a strange decision. So by, you know, this is something that Apple does, for instance, you know, when they have a watch, they announce, or the iPhone, they announce the iPhone 8 months before you could get your hands on one, or, you know, the watch was a whole, you know, a full year, because they can go, it kind of spoils the sales for other companies, because, you know, the consumers are like, well, if I wait a few more months, I can get a Tesla. So it allows Tesla to pull sales from, you know, previous or earlier competition. So while they don't have, you know, they don't have a microbus and they don't have all these different segments right now, but, you know, if Tesla was to announce a Model S, you know, upgrade, and they said, you know, it's going to come out in a year, nobody would buy Model S's for,
yeah, or,
you know, for that time period. So they're in a kind of a unique position because they're not like other automakers where they have a truck line and a SUV and all this other stuff. So they can do this right now. But you know, once they catch up and they have products in all these categories, they're not going to be able to do these year early or 2 or 3 year early announcements.
Yeah, for sure. Since it's a new segment for them, it's an opportunity to do that. That's a good point. But yeah, because if you do it with their existing lineup, it's already a problem right now. If there's a rumor coming up that Model S or Model X are getting a new, not even a refresh or anything like that, just a new feature, and it's we haven't seen that much in 2017 actually, because the main thing is a new battery. I think when a car gets a new battery pack, people are interested. Like we start making calculation, like dollar per kilowatt hour. Does it make sense? Is it cheaper? Will I get more range out of it? But Tesla actually didn't introduce a new battery pack for Model S and X in 2017. Well, they sort of did with the 100D configuration, because the 100 kilowatt hour battery pack was introduced in 2016, in late 2016.
But only for the performance versions.
Yeah, they focused the production for the P100D first. And since they had the issue with the pack at first, it took a while before the 100D got delivered. So technically, the 100D was delivered in 2017. But in terms of new battery pack capacity, the 100 kilowatt hour was introduced in 2016. So there was no new pack in 2017. So that only does actually what we expect from 2018. And we published an article on that this week, what we expect from Tesla in 2018. And we talked about Model 3, of course, since officially 2017 was the year of the Model 3, was the year of the launch and start of production, ramp up. But of course, there were some very publicized delays in the ramp up. But as we reported extensively in the last few weeks, those delays are mostly worked through, and well, those production issues are mostly worked through. And right now, deliveries are going at full speed. This week, we saw a new video. Some an electric reader ended up taking a quick drone video at Fremont Factory, and we saw what we saw the week before was like just parking lots full of Model 3s, and they were, which was mostly a good sign for most people watching. But as usual, the Tesla naysayers started saying, "Oh, if there's Model 3 in the parking lot, it's because they have issues with the something, a production defect or something, or there's no demand for it. Like people are not there's a lot of reservation, but people are not confirming the orders or something like that." But this week we crushed that speculation with we saw that the cars were just flowing out of the factories in the parking lot, and after a while the trucks were coming and they were putting the Model 3s on the trucks, and the trucks were going to delivery centers in Fremont, in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, and everywhere in California right now.
Yeah, it seems like Tesla is now starting to get that, you know, close to that peak where they were hoping to get at the end of the year. It just the curve wasn't quite as smooth as originally anticipated. It's more like it was more like a L curve, you know, like it just really low and then boom, all the way up to the top.
Yeah.
But you know, they got there, I guess, or they're getting.
Well, we don't know for sure. For sure, there was an increase in production, but are they right now at 5,000 a week? I'm not sure, but they could be. Like I think at the last earning call, Elon was talking about, even though they confirmed during that call that they were missing that 5,000 a week target, he said that it was at least a couple a thousand a week. So that might be true with what we're seeing right now, with just anecdotal evidence from what we see at Fremont with our little spies and such.
Yeah, but, and I don't know if you saw that tip, Fred, but somebody in the Fremont area tipped us that they're going to be working at the factory basically, you know, 24/7 until midnight on New Year's Eve, cranking out absolutely as many Model 3s as they possibly can. Yeah. Although I think that would probably be the case anyway.
Yeah, we were expecting that anyway. The question is more like how many Model 3s that will come that will come to. But because earlier this month, when I published my report for the expectation for deliveries in Q4, which we're gonna have as soon as next week, Tesla will confirm them early next week. I was expecting about 1,000 deliveries for Model 3 in Q4. Right now, I'm thinking that maybe that was low with what we're seeing right now. I mean, I didn't receive that today, but for deliveries today, I got 12 separate reports from people that were taking deliveries today. And we have Jamie's Electric, as Jameson Dow is also taking delivery. And
he's got a two, I think.
Yeah, I think, well, in his family, he's getting two. So, but separately, I got like from readers, I got 12 reports for deliveries today over the last week that people got confirmed deliveries today. So I can only assume that if that has to be less than 10% of people taking deliveries that would try to contact me or Electric and probably a lot less than 10%. So they could be as many as hundreds of deliveries per day of the Model 3 right now. I wouldn't be that surprised. I actually think that the bottleneck might be deliveries right now. Like if we look at the video that we saw from the Fremont factory and everything, like why are the Model 3s parked in the inventory is going up and Model 3s are parked in Fremont and something like that. I think that like there's a limit on Tesla's delivery capacity too. They are used to delivering Model S and X, and there's always a rush at the end of the year for those vehicles anyway. Then you add the Model 3 on top of that, it's starting to get difficult. At least Model 3 right now is just existing owners. They already are Tesla owners, so they are familiar with the technology already. So maybe deliveries can be easier if you don't have to go through
process. It's kind of weird. And we saw that, so there was one other data point, that car registry thing where they report recalls. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure. Are you talking about the VINs?
Yeah, the VIN numbers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, we saw a bump this weekend.
So we saw a big bump.
It went from like 4,000 to 8,000, I think.
Right.
Something like that. Like it was the biggest bump yet.
So, you know, that's another a good sign that production is finally ramping up. I think Tesla on their quarter four earnings call is going to say something like, you know, we met our end of year goal of having 5,000, you know, per week. Because, you know, we had maybe 100 the second week before, but our last week we actually had 5,000. So
yeah, and they could even say like the last 3 days they were at the rate that would end up being 5,000 a week. So there's definitely a lot of ways to play with that. We got to be careful. But if they technically are, then it's great. I mean, it bodes well for 2018, which is what we're going to talk about with the Model 3 in 2018. And it's going to be the year where like deliveries just take off and you get to see the real potential of the vehicle, I think. Because right now, it's still very much in the core Tesla fan base, I think, because you have to reserve the vehicle over 2 years ago to take delivery right now. You have to be a Tesla owner to take delivery right now. So, or being the Tesla family to get a delivery. So it's really still the core fan base. But as Tesla start delivering those vehicles to new owners and even, still people that reserved 2 years ago. So they have a good knowledge of Tesla for sure, because you don't put $1,000 just for fun like that. So there's still people that they can be fan of Tesla. But I think it's going to broaden the market a lot for Tesla. And a lot of more people will start considering the car as an option in the buying process, because right now we still don't have the standard battery pack. We're still stuck with the premium interior option. So the Model 3 right now is not really a 35,000 car as promised by Tesla originally. But if all goes well, it should be soon. It should be in the next few months. So once that's true, then a lot of people can start making the calculation like, okay, I'm not used to buying a $35,000 car, but if I take into account the gas savings, and we're gonna still have the in the US, you're gonna still have the federal tax rebate, so that might be make a difference too. We have states incentive too, so I think it's gonna make a lot of sense for a lot of people to look into it, and I think we can maybe even see like a pickup in the backlog at some point even, so that could be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Tesla reports. It's also like, you know, the people who purchased a Model 3 at this point have, you know, they put $1,000 down. But, like, that's knowing that you're not going to get a car for 2 years or whatever. I mean, when you can actually go to a Tesla store and buy, you know, like, you know, in a reasonable amount of time, like maybe a month or a couple weeks or whatever, or maybe they have, down the road when they actually supply catches up with demand. It'll be interesting to see how many people that's going to open up a whole new floodgate of people, because, you know, generally speaking, people don't buy a car sight unseen. Like that's kind of a weird, that's already weird. Yeah. So, you know, I think the demand for the Model 3 is so off the charts that, you know, we're just kind of scratching the surface with the crazy 400,000 reservations. I think there's going to be so many more people once they, you know, once their neighbor has one, once they're, you know, able to actually sit in one and drive one and, you know, get you know, reputable reports from them. I think that's going to kick off another wave of purchasing. And, yeah. I don't know when, like, I don't know when Tesla's going to, when supply is going to meet demand.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be sooner in the U.S. than people think, because even though right now Tesla says that if you reserve a new Model 3 right now, you're not going to see that until late 2018 or even 2019, something like that. But once Tesla is really at 5,000 a week and going toward 10,000 a week, and since they launch country by country, they need to have the homologation in Europe and the homologation even just in Canada. So that can take times and can delay some launches. I think some markets gonna have it later than they think. And previous experience shows us that even like Model X, which had a significant backlog for a vehicle of its price. And after a while, that reservation, like where you are in that number of reservation, doesn't matter that much if production is coming and everything. So I think maybe like second quarter to mid 2018, you're gonna be able in some market in the US, I think you could order just the Model 3 right now and get delivery in a month or two, as long as production is all production issues are fixed. So I'm talking 5,000 a week going to 10,000. I think that makes sense.
I think we're probably, I mean, my personal opinion is I don't think you're going to be able to buy a Model 3 within, you know, like a normal amount of time until 2019.
Yeah.
I just think we're so far out right now. People are, and nobody's ever seen one. Like, you know, like once people start seeing them, they're going to be like, hey, this is real. I can actually buy one. And hey, they're great. They're fast and they're, you know, nice interior. Like that's going to kick off a whole nother round of reservations. And like that might be as big as the current round of reservations. And, you know, yes, Tesla is going to be building a ton of these things, but like a lot more people are going to see them. And I mean, it's kind of unfathomable to me how many are already reserved sight unseen 2 years out, whatever. And this is, you know, like, by and large, like the people who have seen, you know, we've seen the prototypes and we've seen a couple, like the people who've seen them are like, yeah, they're great cars. Like it's everything we expected. Like it's going to be a great car and it's going to sell well. Like, so all signs point to this, like these 400,000 just being kind of the tip of the iceberg. So, you know, I don't know that Tesla, until it starts opening factories elsewhere, is going to be able to keep up with demand. And you know, when the Model Y comes out, that's going to be a whole other issue. And I mean, I just think the Model 3 is going to be a big seller. It's going to be very similar to the Model T, where yeah, it's just going to be for a decade. It's going to be like one of the best selling cars out there.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. But there's also going to be another factor to take into account, is that like the new version of the Model 3 when they come out, like the standard battery pack and the all-wheel drive and potentially even the performance version that was promised earlier. So that's going to also change the market a little, because people that already have a reservation, there's going to be a huge part of those people that are just looking for the standard battery pack or just looking for the all-wheel drive version. So that's going to change the... where you are on the reservation list. Maybe some people are going to be able to jump the list if a huge chunk of people that are closer to the top decide to wait for another version, so that they can have an impact. But yeah, so we're talking about Model Y too, so that's something to look forward in 2018. While we don't think it was going to go in production in 2018, we're pretty sure we're going to see the car. So something similar to the Model 3 event back in March 2016, we think that we're probably gonna see a similar event for the Model Y, maybe even the first half, maybe around the first last time too for the Model 3. So March.
So real quick, what do you think? What do you think about the Model Y? Is it gonna have the Falcon Wing doors? Is it gonna be kind of like a mini Model X? What do you think?
I think it's going to look a lot closer to Model 3 than Model X. So even though Elon was trying to demand about including the Falcon Wing door, I'm not so sure that's going to make the final version. Maybe because, as I understand it, there's not that many problems with the Falcon door anymore. So a lot of people were very skeptical about it. You have them right now and you're in cold climate. You have snow and everything. It's not that big of a problem, right?
If
you
open the door. They're fine. Until I got them, I was actually pretty worried about what they would be like, because I had heard so many reports, but they seem to be pretty fine.
Yeah. One time with sensors too, like things like that, but that's mostly worked through, I think.
Yeah. I think, you know, the software updates and have helped those along. And you know, obviously there's the cool factor. Like, I'm not a big fan of like show off cars, but, you know, whenever I drop off my kid and the door goes up, people are always like, ooh, ah, whatever. So, you know, I don't know what Tesla's going to do with the Model Y. They're clearly a company that likes to do cool and neat things. You know, one thing I saw is I think Lincoln has a truck out that instead of having two, you know, like a Falcon Wing and a regular door, they just have one Falcon Wing door that opens to both the front
it's
and
a,
the
it's
back.
It's a gold wing, though. It's not a Falcon Wing. Like, it's a normal
one inch gold
wing. But yeah, it covers the front doors too. So yeah, that's a good point, though. You're right. Maybe for a Model Y, that makes sense. I don't know, really. I envision a Model 3 just a little bit higher with an hatch too. Like, that's right. Going to be a big deal for other people. The people who don't like the trunk of the Model 3. So I envision like a Model 3 with a hatch a little bit higher. And just that alone, I think it's going to change the market for the vehicle platform that they're already using the Model 3. I think if they can keep it as close as possible as the Model 3 with that, and share more parts, because that was a thing with the Model S. When Tesla introduced the Model X, they were saying, it's going to be easier, they're going to share a lot of parts, but I don't remember the exact number, but it was extremely low at first. So I think Tesla worked to add more parts with time, but at first, the Model X and Model S shared very little parts, which contributed to the early production issues with the Model X. So if they can instead get that closer with Model 3, Model Y, and get the car to production faster, it could have a bigger impact on the market, I think, than having something flashy like a Falcon Wing door. But at the same time, I would also like to see Falcon Wing door on a vehicle that I could purchase. But yeah, we're going to see the Model Y in 2018. We're almost 100% sure of that. They were already like, we know Tesla's prototypes already and stuff like that. We've seen at least clear models and stuff already leak. Well, not the full thing, but we saw that they had one in the design studio when they were working on the Model 3. But if we move to Tesla's current vehicle programs in 2018, aside from Model 3, I already talked a lot about Model 3, Model S and Model X, we think those should see a few updates in 2018, and we're not just talking about software updates. Like we said, no new battery pack in 2017. Tesla generally have a few of those in the works. So Elon Musk said that Tesla isn't really looking to push further than 100 kilowatt hours for a battery pack for a passenger car, which makes sense. You're actually better off focusing on if your energy density improves, then you stick with 100 kilowatt hours, but you make it lighter and you can achieve more range that way. But
And also charging, like getting that infrastructure.
Charging goes faster.
Faster charging, yep.
But, as soon as you improve your efficiency, then you improve your charging time too. But if you talk about another level of battery pack, a new capacity of battery pack, I think that would make sense in 2018 to maybe further differentiate the standard version of the Model S and the Model 3. We're speculating right now, but the only good clue that we have is if you remember a few months back, Tesla started shipping 85 kilowatt, because Tesla officially discontinued the 85 kilowatt hour pack over a year ago, but a few months back they started delivering new 85 kilowatt hour packs under a new code. It wasn't old packs that they were repackaged, it was a new code for the pack. 85 kilowatt pack software locked at 75. And it was a very weird thing to happen because we were the only ones basically to report on that. We work with a source in Norway because the first few pack ended up coming to Norway in Model S and Model X 75 and 75D. And Tesla never acknowledged it. Like we tried to work with Tesla and what's up with you guys delivering 85 kilowatt hour pack software locked at 75? And the owners weren't aware of it, and Tesla didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to comment about it. Then they did the same thing in the US a few months later, and same thing happened. And it wasn't like all cars that were 75 were delivered at 85 software lock at 75 kilowatt hour. It was just like a few models on a few occasions, but it was in the hundreds, I think. Like it wasn't like a dozen or so, it was hundreds of cars. And but most other cars that were 75 were really 75 or whatever is the actual capacity of the pack. I think it's a little bit more than 75 now. But anyway, so that was weird. Maybe that was a test or something, or we're not sure. They were maybe trying to add a new model, to the pack, or something like that. Maybe it's something that's going to come out as a regular model in 2018. I don't know, but it will make sense to have like a. Though it's pretty close, right? If you have an 85 and a 100, because right now it's a big jump. Like you went from 75 to 100.
Yeah, 75 and 100 seems like a nice, you know,
jump.
Nice space.
Yeah.
85, a little bit less so. But, you know, if there's 85s out there, maybe that means, you know, Elon wasn't being 100% honest and they've got 110 or 120 pack coming. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't definitive. Like, we will never do anything stronger than 100 for Model S and X.
And that could be him just, and all, you know, like easing concerns. Because that, you know, when you're buying a Tesla, you're like, well, I want to make sure that they're not going to upgrade anytime soon. So I want to, you know, I want to buy. And, you know, maybe that's him assuaging concerns that.
Yeah. Yeah. But aside from the battery pack, too, we could see other different upgrades this year to the Model S and Model X program. I'm thinking maybe something like an interior refresh, maybe. So Tesla never had like a full-on interior refresh. There was an exterior refresh in 2016. But in terms of interior, it changed considerably over the years since the launch of 2012 in the Model S. It changed a lot. The seats changed a lot. The interior trims changed a lot. The back seat changed this year. This year there was like a significant update to the back seat too. But it was like gradual. It wasn't like a big refresh at the same time. So I don't know, since there was a lot of upgrades over the years, like you won't change the backseat right now. So they changed the backseat just a few months back. But I don't know, maybe that's something that could make sense in 2018, like a Model X interior redesign.
Yeah, so refresh. My take on that is, you know, I have some software developer friends who are kind of like baffled why Tesla now has two UIs. They have the long of the Model S and the Model X, and kind of the Roadster also had kind of a long, skinny UI.
You mean the new one, right?
Yeah, the new Roadster has that, you know, new like OLED long display, whereas the Model 3 has the
horizontal.
It's 15 inch. But it's kind of weird that Tesla's working on two totally separate UIs. You know, obviously, like the elements inside the UIs are taken from each other and used over and over again. But would it surprise you to see that, like, you know, an upgrade to the Model S and Model X where you also get that big, you know, maybe it's bigger. Maybe it's not a 15-inch display. Maybe it's like a 21-inch display. You know, maybe you get a 21-inch 4K display for the Model S and X instead of the longer. Well, I think it's 17-inch current.
Yeah, 17-inch. I agree with the weirdness of having a vertical experience versus an horizontal experience. That makes sense. But I think Tesla wants to keep like the two screen advantage of Model S and X. That's something like they mentioned in like the comparison. If you want a more luxury, you want the Model S, and Model S has two screens, the Model 3 has only one screen. So when they try to upsell you to a Model S from a Model 3, that's one thing that they use. So switching to just one screen and an horizontal one instead of a vertical one for Model S and X, I'm not that sure. But like if we talk interior, there's other things like that was introduced in the Model 3, like the climate control, like the fan systems, that's really like right now, I think, from already Model 3 owners. So we're gonna look into that more with Jamie getting his Model 3 this week. But that may be something that could make it to the interior of Model 3, Model S. But that alone has some other implications. So like, if you do that one fan thing, then can you have a second screen? Can you have the instrument cluster? How do you work that into just a fan that runs along the entire dash? So that has interesting implications.
Also, there's a camera in the Model 3, interior camera. That might be an interesting add-on if you ever plan to Uber your car or whatever.
Yeah, driver facing, interior facing camera. So that has when we reported on that earlier this year, we reported that the code's also in the Tesla source code of the software. Made mention of the Tesla network, so that it was both part of like a autopilot hardware suit, if you will. So it's another sensor, but there was also mention of the Tesla network, so very useful for, like Seth mentioned, the rideshare element. Other things that could come to the Model S and Model X, if there's upgrades to the battery pack and the powertrain in general, maybe an upgrade in the charge rates, like if we talk about just charge rate, well, charging time improving with the efficiency of a vehicle, but just pure charge rate, like the capacity to take a bigger power output from a DC charger, from a supercharger, that would be something to that would make sense to come relatively soon, because competitors right now, even though the networks are not coming close to the size and availability of the supercharger network, the charge rates are starting to beat Tesla, though. We saw last week, we saw 175, or was that in Europe, like 175 kilowatts, I think, that was deployed. It's operational, it's working right now. There's no cars that can take it, but maybe Tesla could take it or something, because Tesla talked a lot about increasing the charge rates, and it never come.
It's, yeah, and I wonder if the new battery packs that are in the Model 3, I wonder if they make it over. I mean, that would be a big deal if all of a sudden Tesla started putting the 2170. Is it 2170 or 2070? I keep forgetting.
2070 cells, yeah.
2070 cells. If those are able to charge a lot quicker than the 18650s that are currently in the Model S and X, I wonder if that would be a big, I mean, that would clearly be a big deal if those batteries could somehow charge a lot quicker.
It's so big of a deal that Tesla wouldn't confirm it until it's in the Model S and Model X. That's the thing, too.
Right.
So we're just talking about that, the announcing features that are headed. Like, right now, it's not even in the same vehicle program. If you announce a feature that's in another vehicle program of Tesla, people will want to assume that it's going to be another one, so you can do that. What we've seen right now from our example, I don't think I've seen anything higher than 120 kilowatts, because technically one supercharger can deliver 145, I think. But all Tesla vehicles so far have been locked. All Model S and X have been locked to 120 max. And what I've seen so far from Model 3, from just examples of supercharging the Model 3, I've never seen anything higher than 120, so... I don't
know. Even in the summer with an empty Model X 90, we never even got, I think we got close to 120. We had like 118 or something like that. So,
so many factors that come into account for those things. But that will be nice to see in 2018 coming. And one thing, of course, that Tesla owners are going to be looking forward in 2018 is the Autopilot program. What kind of progress we can see in the Autopilot program in 2018. So there's no idea. Like 2017 was rough for people with Autopilot 2.0 and even 2.5 now. So people are waiting for Autopilot and enhanced Autopilot features, even technically fully self-driving. So we reported like 30-35% of Autopilot 2.0 buyers ended up purchasing fully self-driving features. And that's a big investment that they are not seeing much return on it right now.
Nope.
By much, I mean not at all.
Right.
So depending on who you ask right now, Autopilot 2.0 is basically at feature parity with Autopilot, first generation Autopilot. I don't think if you agree with that. Like,
yeah, I honestly, I don't even know if that's the case. Like, yeah. I mean, when I have Autopilot too on the Model
I'm
X.
Talking about just I'm just talking about like TAC and like traffic aware cruise control and auto steer, like
features, yes, but
yeah, those two features, like they are performing as well or better than Autopilot 1. What do you think?
My feeling is that I don't know if they do perform as well, because you know, on a nice straight kind of flat, well painted and paved highway, the AP2 hardware does fine. But once things, you know, like once you get on kind of like a not well done highway, it gets scary. Like, you know, my wife won't let me do it with anybody in the car. so it's, I mean, it's definitely, it, and you know what? I see like videos of AP1 doing a lot better than AP2.
Really?
And so I'm, you know, I haven't scientifically tested it. It just feels to me like AP2 isn't where AP1 is yet. And that was supposed to happen, I think, in January, right?
Yeah, a year ago, in December 2016. But so yeah, I don't think I spent enough time with AP1 I spent more time with AP2 than AP1. So I don't have like the best opinion, most valuable opinion on it here. But same. I get fed a lot of, you also went from like a pre-autopilot to autopilot 2.2 car. So
right.
You're in a similar position as I am. But even though I don't have a car with autopilot right now, but I mean, I spend a lot more time with AP2 than AP1. But I get fed a lot of videos and comments from owners and a lot of owners that went from AP1 to AP2. And AP2 is definitely better at some things than AP1, and AP1 might be better at other things than AP2. But like on a general sense, I think a lot of people start to agree that AP2 is starting just to get ahead of the curve than AP1. But the good news is that what slowed down the implementation of new features of Autopilot in 2017 was working on the neural net system. And working on Tesla Vision, the new computer vision system from Tesla. So, and we saw that if you just look at the data that Tesla collected this year, the big, like the, Tesla didn't start collecting data in volume until May of 2017. So when you take that into account, and I there was like one bump in May, and I think a few months later, like in July or something, there were another bump, and Tesla started collecting even more data from his autopilot cars. And now that they have like the neural net system in place, that they can feed the data to the neural net and improve, I think that equates to laying the foundation for the autopilot, enhanced autopilot, and fully self-driving. And now in 2018, the features will come in. And I know that Musk this week and last month started hyping an upcoming software update that will start to impress people more. So that has been the case for the past few months, really, and we haven't seen that yet. Even John McNeil, Tesla president for sales and service, when he was in the Netherlands 2 months ago, did the same thing. He says that he had access to the latest beta update for the autopilot, and that he was really impressed. So I don't know if that's something that can calm some, because there's definitely is frustration with autopilot Tesla owners with autopilot that bought the $5,000 and then the $8,000 features that is not really up to that price yet.
But, do you think that the roadmap kind of got shaken when Sterling Anderson left? What's his name? Sterling.
Yeah, Anderson. Sterling Anderson.
Yeah,
Anderson. So, yeah, there were a lot of changes the leadership of autopilot over the last year. So it went from Sterling Anderson to now I'm not sure if it's Sterling Anderson or Anderson Sterling. I'm pretty sure it's Sterling Anderson.
And then the Apple
Chris
guy.
Chris Lattner came on. Then. So those guys were like the program director of the autopilot. They right. led the overall program, but then on the you also had like Jim Keller was leading the hardware, and it wasn't. So after Chris left, they brought Caperty on, so it was reported a lot. Like Caperty was overseeing the old program now, like. Lattner and Anderson war, but he ended up just taking over the software side, or not even just the software side. Focus on the because there are other people working like on the just delivering software, which is is pretty incredible job for Autopilot, because you're delivering software that's basically controlling the car on the highway and stuff. So it's pretty insane stuff to deliver that. But Cabrilli ended up focusing more on the AI aspect and the neural net system, because that's really is a and vision too. That's really is that's what he's good at. Jim Keller ended up overseeing now the old program of Autopilot when Chris Lattner left. And now he's also in charge of making a chip, as we learned last month. So, of course, a few change in leadership like that, to answer Seth's question. Yeah, it's it must have an impact on delivering more features to the Autopilot program. But when we take everything into account, I think technically 2018 should be a much better year for Autopilot. What else?
So should we talk about some of the other vehicles outside of Tesla, the electric vehicles? Because, you know, when you were putting this together last week, I was kind of surprised at the relative few amount of new vehicles that we expect in 2018. And you know, it's not like the electronics industry where, you know, Apple releases something that you had no idea existed and it's in stores like a couple days later. Cars are different. Like, you know about a car, you know, years in advance. So it's kind of weird that there's not much coming down the pike this year, or 2018, relatively speaking. But there are some cool things happening, and there's some, you know, upgrades, and there's some cool stuff that's kind of just ramping up now. So, you know, what we talked about, like the iPace and some cool stuff coming out of Korea. What's exciting for you outside of Tesla?
Yeah, like you said, I was surprised by that too. Like, when I decided to make a post about the electric cars that are actually coming to market, like not just new unveils and new prototypes and stuff, just cars that are gonna get in the hands of customer. It was just iPace, Audi Quattro, Hyundai is coming both with electric version of the Kona and the Niro. Well, Niro is Kia, but Kia is Hyundai, so it's the same thing. So that's four new cars, like officially that's coming from established automakers. Four new cars. So you asked me what's exciting. Not that excited about the Kona and the Niro.
And those are based on like the Ioniq, I think, which is.
The powertrain is, but the both vehicles are existing vehicles with ICE engines and PHEV plug-ins engines. So we're talking about electric version, like they did with the Ioniq. You're right.
Right.
So dealing with the Ioniq, but
the Ioniq is not a powerful. It's not a it's not a Tesla by any stretch of the imagination. It's kind of compliance-y car.
So the only good thing about, well, nah, that's not fair. It's not the only good thing. It's a decent car. But the best thing about the Ioniq, that's a better way to phrase that, is the price. So it's fairly cheap. It's fairly cheap when you account for incentives. So if there weren't any incentive, I don't know if that many people would buy that kind of car for $30,000. But so that same advantage, the pricing advantage, it looks like it might make it to the Kona and the Niro electric version too. No prices yet have been confirmed, but they are talking about €35,000, so that's $40,000. So in terms of a crossover, small SUV, that'd be the best price right now for an electric vehicle. And apparently they're working for the 50 kilowatt hour pack, which is also a pack that should make it to the new Ioniq next year or the year after that. So it's going to be the same Ioniq, but with a pack upgrade, not unlike what we're seeing with the Nissan Leaf. So Leaf, the next gen, it came out with a 40 kilowatt hour pack, but they should launch a 60 this year, next year. So something similar. So there might be something interesting there.
If the Ioniq gets a 50 kilowatt battery, then that's going to be some serious range, because with a 26 kilowatt, it's a 26, I think, kilowatt, that thing goes 120, 28. It goes 125 miles or so. Mm-hmm. So bumping it up to 50 is probably going to put it to 200. So yeah. 200 miles on a 50 kilowatt battery. And I'm imagining that it's not going to cost that much more than what the current price is. So that might be an interesting car on the low end.
But in terms of volumes, that's what's bugging me with Hyundai. And even right now, the Ioniq Electric is in low volume, and they're still talking about... So there were sources from the supply chain in Korea that was talking about Hyundai planning for 20,000 units of each. So it's still a very low volume car. They got probably focused the deliveries in carbs market with ZEV mandates and some European markets. That makes sense. But so what we're most excited about is the I-Pace, the Jaguar I-Pace, and the Audi Quattro. So those are both more expensive vehicles that aim to compete more with the Model X than anything else. But the most exciting thing about them, I think, for the Audi Quattro at least, they specifically mentioned that it's not going to be a compliance car. So if we are to take them to their word there, then that's going to be like a full EV program, all electric vehicle built to be electric from the ground up from a major German automaker. So that's just on its own. It's exciting without having driven the vehicle yet that they have that kind of commitment. And yeah. If we look at the actual specs, it does make sense. 95 kilowatt hour battery pack. They're talking about 310 miles, but that's ENDC, so probably like 250, 275, something like that. The only thing for the Quattro that we don't know for sure yet, it's the price. So that's if they are going after the Model X, then you can expect something like 75,000 and up. But because that's a thing too. Like if you look at the pricing, when automakers are established automakers that already have an extensive product lineup, they introduce an EV and they say, it's gonna be positioned between this model and this model. And those two models are like $40,000 and $50,000. So you think that since it's going to be positioned between them, it's going to be the same price or in the same range. But then it ends up being like $10,000, $20,000 more expensive. And we were taking into account the incentive and so forth and the gas price and everything, which makes sense to a degree. But I think the sticker price, what do you call it? The sticker shock or something like that. That has a big impact on people at the end of the day. Like a lot of people just don't take into account the gas saving and stuff. They don't want to. But in terms of the Jaguar though, the I-Pace, we got new information last week. We talked about it on the podcast, so we won't go into details. But it looks like it's gonna be really like a Model X competitor, but in smaller size. So that's coming in the second half of 2018. So it's gonna be like a 2019 model officially, but it should get into the dealership in 2018. So technically, we're talking about launch in 2018.
Yeah, and it might be good for people who don't like the Tesla interiors, you know, the kind of the sparse, minimalist interiors. Although, you know, as far as Jaguars go, it did seem a little bit minimalist.
Yeah, the prototype, yeah.
So, but, you know, Jaguar's been doing pretty good interiors for a long time. So I think that's one area where they can differentiate and maybe pull in some people who... you know, maybe didn't buy a Model X or a Model S because they didn't like the interior. So that might be good. And the same goes for the Audi. You know, Audis are much nicer inside, or not nicer, but much more plush, I guess, would be a way to describe it, where, you know, there's a lot more dials and knobs and vents and all those things that fill out the interior of a car. So I think both the Quattro, I mean, we've been hearing about Audi and, you know, the greater Volkswagen making EVs forever. It might be nice that one actually comes out besides the e-Golf. So that would be exciting for me just on that basis alone.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be the first all-electric vehicle built from the ground up to be electric. If you don't account for like the Audi R8 electric that came out a few years ago, but it was dead on arrival at $1 million a pop. And from the entire Volkswagen family, like you said, so that's really the first one. Volkswagen has a lot of brands now. We're talking Audi, we're talking Porsche, we're talking VW, we're talking what else? Like they have a bunch of Europe-only brands like Eastern European brands and stuff.
Like so Skoda, I think.
Or? Yeah, Skoda and such.
And the e-Golf is basically just a compliance type car where they take the Golf and they gut the internal combustion engine and they throw in some batteries and an electric engine and they say, look, we're making an EV.
Yeah, you look at the actual like motor compartment of the e-Golf and it looks like the weirdest thing ever. You just like they took out the engine and just strapped some new mounts to a steel mount to put the inverter, to put the motor and everything. So it's just, you can see that it's just like a Frankenstein of an EV. But speaking of the e-Golf, this week VW ended up announcing that they were doubling the production of it at the I think it's they make it at two different factories, and the main one, like the one that they call the transparent factories, which is architecturally speaking is really like a beautiful factory, and they were making like just 35 a day or something like that, and they plan to double that next year. So you can see that's like a buffer for until they have the real volume production EVs coming in 2008. Well, with the Quattro, then 2019 is going to be the first route for VW, for the VW brand. So that's like a buffer in the meantime for where they have higher demand. Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is Norway. Like when we look at Norway's numbers, e-Golfs are always like, you know, up there with Tesla and.
Yeah. And well, the Golf is already popular in Norway. Like it's just the diesel version. So.
But you know, you don't have the Chevy Bolt or Volt in Norway. You have the Ampera, and you know, Chevy or GM sent like, you know, 10 over there for the year.
A few hundreds. They ended up sending a few hundreds, but
not enough. Clearly,
yeah. Well, yeah. Actually, that's a good point. Yeah, because it could be a competitor, especially with the 2017 version that end up with almost 40 kilowatt hour battery pack. So the range is not that bad. I think it's like 130 miles or something like that, close to 200 kilometers. And the GM did end up sending a few hundred Bolt to Opel to sell as an Emperor E in Norway. But last month, things degenerated with between Opel and GM. At least according to Opel, they said that they were increasing the price out of nowhere since GM sold Opel to Peugeot and the PSA group, the Peugeot and Citroën. And they said they were increasing the price even on those that were not on. It wasn't even a reservation for them. They were like they signed a contract with the dealerships. Even people that did sign a contract with the leadership, but they had a delivery plan in like maybe late 2017 or 2018. Even them were getting the price increase, which was as much as I think $5,000 or euros.
I'm not sure if we
transferred that number. So I'm pretty sure that a lot of people just canceled from that, and even just by. Just by principle, really, it's a shitty thing to do. So, and those people might have turned more to an e-Golf than a Tesla or something like that. So, maybe New Leaf is popular.
The New Leaf is going to be big everywhere. Relatively big everywhere. We haven't really talked too much about that, and I guess that's a 2018 car for. So, I mean,
yeah, that's one thing that we didn't mention in the post. Like, the Leaf technically in the U.S. is going to be a 2018 car. Yeah,
and you know, it's 150 miles. Like, they're going to have a 60 kilowatt engine one, which will probably push it closer to 200 miles. You know, we've tooled around in the Leaf. Jameson did a
review,
kind of a first look. He actually drove it, but so. I don't know. It's just not very exciting. Like it's in every way better than the previous Leaf. Like that's one thing you have to give it to me. Like they made everything better.
Except for charging.
But
every way better except for charging. They have the exact same charging infrastructure. Then.
Right. So, or the same or better. And it's kind of, it's frustrating at this point that you don't get, you know, a better car, you know, more miles. It's bigger inside, which is nice. We looked at the interior. It's perfectly fine. Not exciting, but you know, there were little things like the doors, you know, they're not like super quality doors. They're like, kind of feels like a, you know, the lowest end kind of doors, and like the charging port feels like it could be ripped off accidentally. Like, Nissan isn't like an aspirational brand, you know, it's like, you know, like I got to get from point A to point B. Like,
they sat on their lead. That's the thing. Like,
they really did. About,
yeah.
They had lead. It, you know, they were the EV.
And they think they still are. Like, I cringe a few times with the launch of the new Leaf. I like the car, I like the redesign. Well, I'm not the biggest fan of the design, but comparatively to the last generation, it was like definitely a big update. But they were completely delusional about being the leader, and they did deliver a lot of Leaf, but if you look at what's the pipeline from other manufacturers, like, it's not up to the level that people
are gonna. I mean, forget Tesla. Like, just compare the Chevy Bolt to it. Like, the Chevy Bolt is better in every way. It's faster, way bigger battery, you know, it charges faster. You know, like, the interior size isn't quite as big, but it's like pretty close. Just tons of things that, you know, Chevy blew right by Nissan, and they didn't catch up. Like, 150 miles versus 240. It's like a night and day difference.
You look at the comment right now. Q-tip shard. The Leaf is average looking at best. It's right. It's not a great looking car. That's for sure. But I mean, comparatively to what it looked like of the previous generation, then it's like most aesthetically pleasing car in the world comparatively. But speaking of the aesthetically pleasing car, the Porsche, how do you pronounce Porsche? I say just Porsche, but people say Porsche sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know.
The Mission East this week, we had the Automobile Magazine ended up getting an exclusive test drive of the prototype. And with their test drive, they wrote a report on it, mentioning exclusive sources with new information, and considering there were like a lot of Porsche engineer at the event, we can assume that those sources are pretty good. And they did mention a few interesting that they were going to be three different trims, similar. So there's no idea yet. Like, they're going with the Mission E, they're going after the Model S. That's for sure. They were even benchmarking the Model S against the Mission E. And the car is in similar size as a sedan, four doors. The big question was the price. A lot of people were assuming that Porsche is going to be priced a lot higher than the Model S. But that report stated that the base vehicle should be around $75,000, which should be similar to what the Model S, if you compare to what the Model S right now. So that's a big thing when people try to compare the Mission E to the Model S. So you're comparing the Model S right now versus the Mission E in 2019, 2020. So that's like the Model S 2019, 2020 is not the Model S today. It's gonna be different for sure. It's gonna be better. It's gonna be
the Mission, not cheaper. The Mission E, that's a four seater, right?
That's the other thing too. So yeah, the prototype is a four seater, but if you look at the prototype and what's gonna be the production version, like, you know, people are speculating right now. We heard from sources earlier this year that maybe like the back seat is gonna change. It's gonna have a five seat, and also even like the suicide doors right now that you see on the prototype, maybe that won't make it to production, which would be a bummer. So I understand why, like, suicide door, you don't have a B pillar, so that the structure of the roof can be more difficult to make strong and everything. But it looks cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that, I mean, that's something that's exciting about, you know, it's a Porsche. Like, Porsches are exciting. You know, when this report came out, there were a lot of people who were like, whoa, that's a excellent car. Yeah. And then, you know, there's the, you know, RIP Tesla short people who say, like, well, as soon as Porsche comes out with this. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of other things that Tesla brings to the table, like charging infrastructure, like seven seats. You know, some people like the Tesla aesthetic, internal and, you know, the inside and out. It's, you know, we don't know what the final specs are going to be, you know, speed wise as well. Like, clearly it's a Porsche, it's going to be fast, but, you know, I don't think it's going to be P100 fast.
No, they said it already in the report. They said, like, in terms of, well, fast, I don't know. Well, fast, I think they said the same thing. I think they said one like 155, so same top speed as the Model S. But in terms of quickness of the acceleration, they were talking about 3.5 for 0-60, so it's like a full second slower than the top of the line Model S.
Right, and that's this year's Tesla, yeah, not this 2019's.
So the only thing that they confirmed, and also if you can look the report on Automobile Magazine, and we have like a summary on Electrek that just pull out the new information, that just what's been reported already, and the actual power outputs of the three different motor configuration for the trims also looks very similar to what Model S has right now. The big thing that you're trying to sell, you know, and push people, is that the car is going to be able to perform on track. So you can bring that car to the track and do few laps without overheating, which is a problem right now with the Model S. It's not a vehicle that you want to bring to the track, even the performance version. It's good on the drag strip. It's just not good on the Nürburgring or any power-extensive track. They also, of course, since they're a German company, they mentioned the Autobahn. You can push that car on the left lane on the Autobahn at 200 kilometers an hour, and you should be able to drive for a long time without just draining the battery. I don't know, if I just like drive like 20 over the limit here, it drains the battery pretty fast. So I can only imagine in the Autobahn, if you don't have a speed limit at all, like it can be a big drain on it. But aesthetically speaking, just on the aesthetic speaking, the Mission E is just gorgeous. I think a lot better than the Model S, in my opinion. But at the same time, I understand, like, the Model S is designed also maybe the improvement in design for the Mission E compared to the Model S, is it worth it, the functionalities that you're gonna lose? Because the Model S is not as sleek as the Mission E, but the interior's gotta be a lot smaller, I think, ultimately, or less, maybe not smarter, but like less cargo, less functional.
Yeah,
at least from what you see for the prototype,
it certainly looks like that. And the one other thing is the charging rate. Porsche's talking about 350 kilowatt charging rate, which is about more than double what Tesla currently does. So how do they get there? Yeah. Do they have, you know?
Well, they have a full 800 volt system and still about 40 volt.
Right, but how do they
400 volt?
How do their batteries handle that? Is my question. Like,
yeah,
do they have like a new technology that we don't know about, or is it kind of wishful thinking, or is that something Tesla will have in 2 years?
Yeah. Well, I don't think we never got the information about the cells, because there's a lot of things that comes into play in terms of the charging capacity and the battery pack and the wiring and everything, but you know, at one point it comes down to the cells themselves and their discharge rate and their charging rate, and we don't even know what the cells are in the Porsche. I don't think it never came out yet, so that's definitely something that we're gonna look into 2018. That's a good thing to keep in mind, because that's one of the most exciting, I think, EV program coming in the next few years, because like we said, 2018. A lot of interesting coming, but not as much as we would like to. But 2019, 2020, that's going to be the stuff for the EV world. I think that's we're going to need more of a writer and Electrek, I think, in 2019, 2020, because I won't be able with our team right now, three or four people, to handle all those cars coming to market. But we had a great year in 2017, and that's going to be the last time we're going to talk to you on the podcast for the year. We're going to come back next week. It's going to be 2018. And as usual, thanks for listening.
Yeah, and we'll see you in 2018.
Yeah, catch you next time. Bye-bye.